Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Nice to see you all. May it please the court. Despite a few minor inconsistencies on the part of Mr. Sanchez regarding these drug transactions, I believe that the record as a whole supports a finding that he complied with that last subsection of the safety valve statute, which is to provide truthful and complete disclosure of his activities.
Of course, we would have to find that Judge Cannelli made clear error in evaluating all of those facts that were presented to him.
Yes, that's my burden and this court's standard, and I realize it's a tough one. But I think if you look on balance at what Mr. Sanchez did provide, there are earmarks of reliability here. He disclosed the name of his supplier, and that's no small thing. In my practice, that's the last thing that the defendant wants to have to disclose, particularly if you're a small fish and you're pointing the finger at somebody larger. But he did give the name of this individual.
Didn't he make sort of a series of rolling admissions when he would get confronted with something? He would say, oh, yes, that's really the way it happened, and then on and then get confronted with something else and change his story and so on.
Well, yes. And
so it's in that scenario, it's pretty hard to know even when you get to the end whether he's made a full disclosure.
Well, I think it's always difficult to determine that, and it's not helped any.
We regard the trial judges in a unique position to consider those things.
But he's considering them limited to paper disclosures for the most part. You know, this wasn't a full-blown hearing. It clearly wasn't a trial. There's no cross-examination. So we're all reviewing paper disclosures. And it appears that there's a tugging going on, and they're trying to elicit information from Mr. Sanchez. But he takes the agent at his proffer through the transactions. He fully discloses the weight of the drugs involved and the dates that these transactions occurred. He discloses that his wife was present, and although there's some equivocation as to what she knew and what she did, I don't think it's material because the government wasn't looking at her and wasn't pursuing her as any sort of accomplice in the drug transactions.
Well, I suppose in the end not, but they're curious in the process. Maybe she's the source or she's really running. He's just doing her bidding. It's hard to know.
It is hard to know.
Until you get all of the facts.
But it appears that the government knew her identity. They knew of her. They were surveilling Mr. Sanchez. They were surveilling his comings and goings about town. So there was intelligence there that they were developing.
I hope the agents aren't so misogynistic that they think only men can actually be the
I think not. But I think, given Mr. Sanchez's believable position, which is that he doesn't particularly want to throw his wife under the bus, he does equivocate as to what she's doing there and, you know, whether she's got the drugs in her purse and is handing them over. But in spite of that, he discusses her. He discusses the involvement of his brother. I think that, on balance, he's providing a lot of information. He's telling the agents what matters.
I understood Judge Cannelli's take on the wife's role as relating more to a different point, which is to say whether this series of transactions was this defendant's first foray into the drug trafficking world. And
yes.
His hedging and bobbing and weaving on his wife's role, while perhaps springing from the relationship as opposed to a desire to mislead, really had more to do with whether this was
his first
foray, and Judge Cannelli wasn't buying it. That's how I read it.
And I read it the same. I think that's where the court focused at sentencing. And the conclusion that the court draws is that He wouldn't have brought the wife along if he hadn't been comfortable in this setting.
Right, so he's necessarily minimizing.
But I think it cuts both ways. I mean, I think that it's possible on these facts in this scenario to infer that this was a guy who was a novice and didn't know what he was doing and took his wife into this setting, which wasn't the safest thing to do, but he did it because it was, you know,
right.
he
well,
was
that's
new
one,
to this.
Right, that's one take on it, but that's, you know, we don't replace the judge's take on the evidentiary facts from this perch. I mean, this is a dispute about how much truthfulness is required, really, and about what.
Yes, and what substantially you have to comply with.
Right. And so he's truthful about some things. He's untruthful about others. He's a moving target throughout these different discussions, and the judge is entitled to make a judgment about whether he gets consideration, you know, on an overall holistic view of the record, right?
And clearly that is the prerogative of the district court, but this court is here to review that thought process to the extent that we can follow it on the limitations below and on this record. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Sherry Mecklenburg on behalf of the United States. The district court correctly found that the defendant had failed to prove that he was entitled to the safety valve benefits based on three reasons. First, the district court found that the defendant's safety valve proffer did not make sense on its face. The court stated that the story that the defendant told did not hold together. And specifically, the court noted that the defendant claimed that he was a first-time drug dealer, and the court noted the defendant's comfort level with bringing his family members in and his ability to obtain significant quantities based on credit. The second reason that the district court found that the defendant had failed to prove he was entitled to the safety valve benefits was because the defendant's story was contradicted by the evidence. And in that manner, when he was confronted with the evidence, he changed his story several times. He changed his story concerning where he got the drugs. He changed his story concerning his
wife's role. Of course, he only has to get it right by the time of sentencing. Under the safety valve, doesn't he get the benefit of being able to make that disclosure as late as sentencing?
Well, to some extent, Your Honor.
Isn't it permissible to sort of string it out a little bit like he did?
Certainly, Your Honor. A defendant is not given one chance to say one thing and be done. But at the same time, and this would take me to the third reason that the court found that the defendant had not told the truth, and that is the manner in which the defendant told his story. The district court stated that the story came out in dribs and drabs, and essentially the district court used the words it had to be yanked out of the defendant. The district court said that even in the end, reading all of the evidence, including the proffer letter submitted by the defendant, the district court was not convinced that the defendant had told the complete truth.
He was cooperating as he was being dragged through.
That's one way to put it, Your Honor.
Fair way of saying it.
Because there is no clue.
It was not in him unless it was pulled out.
That's what happened, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor, the district court said that the safety valve provision is not intended to allow a defendant to tell to give an untruthful interview and then wait for the government to
catch me.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. Because there is no clear error or any error in the district court's finding that the defendant was not entitled to the safety valve, the government requests that this court affirm the conviction and sentence below.
Thank you. Kister, anything further?
Very briefly. To respond to you, Your Honor. I think that...
it's not a whoops. Oh, you got me.
I'd just like to say that clearly Mr. Sanchez was reticent, but I think we can understand that in terms of his being new to this whole thing.
You might be able to understand it, but the safety valve does not have anything to do with our understanding. It has to do with whether he's candid in his disclosure to the government. And if he isn't, he doesn't get the benefit.
But my point is that being candid is one thing. Being fearful of pointing fingers is part of the process.
Most of the time when I was a prosecutor, I wanted the defendant to be more afraid of me than he was afraid of me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Still afraid of you.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.